Just take a moment to admire the fact that I just hit a fairway.
There's only two things that can happen. You can hit a good shot or a bad shot, so why waste time doing it?
And where I would go, wherever I set course records or whatever, I would be barefooted, drunk, playing golf, making every 20-footer I looked at.
Right at it! Home! He's done it again!
This is the dumbest hole I've ever played in my life.
Come on then, Shane. Knock it close.
Shane Lowry is the Open champion.
Hey everyone, welcome back to another episode of the Fairway Finders. We are on episode number 51. We are back at being a full house again. Steve Donica, lads, how are we doing?
Shook, bro.
Bit shook, Steve.
Yeah. Went out Saturday night late 4 a.m. home job and still not quite recovered. So you'll be glad to know there'll be very few words coming out of me today.
Donnie, absolute dream.
Am I the only one here who isn't fucking circling the drain this Monday?
All right.
Seems like it, doesn't it?
Yeah.
It does.
I'll be leading out in front. Yeah, so good weekend though, Steve.
Good weekend, yeah, but not so much now. Spirits are low. Energy's low.
So I've seen the light. Myself and the missus have said we're going away for 6 weeks. Or we're going away in 6 weeks to Primavera in Barcelona. Can't wait. It's going to be class. But until then, I'm going to save a few quid and I'm officially off the beer. Going to try and get a little bit of fitness together. I've played loads of golf over the weekend. So I tried to qualify for this match play event in Fingal. Tried and failed twice. It was a local club off the blue stakes, off the very back tees. The wind was about 30 to 40 kilometers an hour. Sick. It was the toughest the golf course has ever been. Like, it was fucking impossible. It was such a grind. And the greens were fast. And everywhere was exposed. And I'm shy at golf also, which didn't help.
Always so, next year, Donnie. Always next year.
Wasn't a very successful L weekend. Although, nearly got back-to-back winners in the Zurich. So I had Billy Horschel and Sam Burns. And you know, I did them each way, even though they were only 12-1. And I usually wouldn't bother doing an each way bet at 12-1, but I did, so I covered the week. But it was that team event it's a bit like communism. In theory, it sounds like a good idea, but in practice, it was kind of almost unwatchable.
Now, yeah, it was boring as fuck, to be honest.
Yeah, and I think there's a few reasons why it was dull. So, you know, any of our regular listeners, I'm sure you tuned in probably on Sunday and watched the end, but it seemed dull for a few different reasons. One, there was no world ranking points, so that was a problem. Two, you had Xander and Patrick Cantlay basically went wire to wire, and at no point in time did it look like they weren't going to win from like Friday onwards.
They shot a 59, didn't they, to open up?
They shot a 59, yeah. And I mean, another thing that I don't want to see again for a team event is four balls are kind of putting contests, and they're kind of like the scoring is so low, it's borderline ridiculous. It doesn't feel like much of a team event. Lads just play their own golf ball, and you know, there's no real strategy at play. It's just make as many birdies as you can. The foursomes was a bit better. Like, I know Jason Day and Jason Shrivener shot 7 under in foursomes on the Friday, which was pretty cool. And that was impressive. But yeah, it just wasn't a good look. It just wasn't good, was it?
Yeah, no, it's not for me, I have to say. I think from all the feedback from players is that it's a really, really enjoyable event and they like it as an alternate. I saw Bobby McIntyre calling out the DP World Tour to have some sort of equivalent over there. So apparently the players love it. But yeah, from a viewing point of view, it's just, even like, I didn't get involved betting wise, but even if I did, I'm sure I wouldn't have been glued to it. It's just not, doesn't really excite the same way. I'm a traditionalist 72 hole show play man, and bar the Ryder Cup and match play, that those are the only two exceptions I would say. But yeah, not for me. Yeah.
I was more interested in like someone jump on an alligator there and see what happens.
Yeah, there was a few times. A few times those lads taking leg in the water shots, and alligators no more than 20 meters. What are they doing? Like, just take the drop. You're in a team
giving
event.
The people what they want.
Yeah, that would have made it interesting if fucking top 50 golfer loses a foot from alligator attack. Do you know what I mean? That would get the people tuned in. But other than that,
5 days, it was very boring.
Or someone fighting an alligator, that would have been brilliant. Like a fist fight between, I don't know, Billy Horschel and an alligator. I tune in to watch that now.
Fucking Billy Horschel, he's a little street fighter. He'd get it done.
I'd fancy the alligator now myself.
I don't know.
I think alligator wins against anyone, really. Like, I don't know. I think it was just like, you see the Ryder Cup, you see how successful it is, how many will watch it. I don't blame the PGA for having an event like this, but it just... so underwhelming, though.
Totally on board with the notion. Yeah. Maybe they need a better golf course or
something, right? Like,
I don't know. And there were a bunch of real random teams together. Although one story that I did like was Jay Haas broke the record for the oldest player ever to make a PGA Tour cut with his son Bill, who's an ex FedEx Cup winner, actually. Everyone remembers that legendary shot off the beach at East Lake. That was cool. He's 68 years of age and he made the cut in the PGA Tour event. That's pretty sick. And I don't know about you, but I was totally having the cacks that Lowry and Poulter were wearing all week.
It's having a good banter.
Yeah, yeah. So it seems like it's more fun for the players than it is as a spectator.
To be honest, like, it's, I guess, in a way, kind of like a week off for them. You know, I know it's still technically a PGA event, but it felt like it is kind of a week off for them to kind of have a mental, you know, just kind of break and just chill and have a bit of crack. But still,
but then there were some, like, if you looked at Aaron Roy and David Lipsky, the two boys that are going, well, here, if we can get this over the line and win this, there's our exemption sorted. There's our, you know, there's our status, we're in good shape now for a while. So maybe a little less so, but similar with Higo and Grace. But there was no jeopardy, and the two lads, I'm sorry, but they're a bit dull for me, Xander and Patrick Cantlay, to watch them. It was like dull and duller.
I was gonna say sleepier.
Like, amazing efficiency, they both played great. Absolutely stick them on your short list for the PGA in a couple of weeks, but fuck that.
And also, I have to say, Hovland and Morikawa, when I first saw them, I was like, oh, that's a killer team, and didn't really do much. And I backed Scheffler and Palmer as well, and they were there, thereabouts, but never.
The two lads played too well. And when they were playing best ball, like, what did they shoot? They shot a 59, and then what did they shoot on Saturday? They shot something else. I think it was a 62.
Oh, was it? Yeah, right.
It was just like, it was too easy.
And after Friday, like, they were comfy. I mean, like as you said, after hitting a fucking 59 and then followed up with like a 64, like, if you're not winning a golf tournament after those two scores, there's something wrong. So
absolutely. We also had the ISPS handout championship in Spain, where Pablo Larrazabal shot a 62 in Sunday to go and take it from Adrian Ottategi, and Canadian Aaron Cockerill came third. There's a name to keep going forward.
Can we address Pablo Larrazabal by his full nickname? It's Pablo 62 or 92 Larrazabal. I've never seen a golfer either shoot the lights out or shoot a couple of members of the crowd out. He's nuts. The only other guy I can think of who's like him is Torbjörn Olesen can shoot 63 then 83. There are very few guys who have that variance between rounds. Larrazabal is one of them. But he is on the tear. He's got 5 top threes in 6 events and 2 wins.
Yeah. Insane. Yeah, he had a good Middle East swing as well. Qatar and those places, he played well. And we had Hao Tong Li as well come 6th. Another promising finish for him. He seems to be getting back to some form if he's over injury worries. And Victor Perez too. First time I've seen him up there in a while. Came tight 8th. So it seemed Europe was more exciting this week than the PGA, which is not usually the case. And might be again this week.
I think it is the case this week. So, I mean, lads, look, this is going to be a fairly short pod for our listeners, because this is not the biggest week of the year by any stretch of the imagination. So we've got new status for the Mexico Open, which used to be a national championship and now is part of the PGA Tour schedule and umbrella. So we got that going on. I think it's the first time that Mexico have had two PGA Tour events in a season. Could be wrong on that. And then the DP World Tour is staying in Spain, but moving over to Catalonia for the Catalonia Championship. I think the field for the DP World Tour is more interesting, to be honest.
Definitely is. And the value is much better in terms of the favorite is 20-1 as opposed to 3-1.
I know, I love that. It's actually, there's value everywhere if you can.
Yeah, it's a better betting heat. I think the general advice would be next week we have Quail Hollow on the PGA Tour, and we also have the...
Rory's defending, is he? Is he playing?
Yeah, he is. Rory that's not able to win, obviously, defending champion. For next week.
Oh, listen, he can win when no one gives a shit.
Yeah, and we have the British Masters as well happening next week. So I think this is a, if you want to get involved, keep the stakes low, pick out a couple of big price guys, I would say, and then keep the pot nice and large for next week.
That is exactly right. Okay, let's do one or the other. We'll start over in Mexico, will we?
Go on.
I think if you get John Rahm in the final group on Sunday, I think he stands on next and he's going to get it done.
Because the winner this week is going to be my one and done pick. I put it on Twitter, put my cards down on the line. I'm going for Rory McIlroy.
I'm hopping aboard the Billy Ho train. He's 28, so I think you can get him.
Straight off the bat, not even going to waste time. Paul Casey and Sam Burns, previous winners, both over 22-1. I think that's an absolute value bet there. My third pick is Hideki Matsuyama. I got him at 18s this morning.
So yeah, this is the Vedanta Villarta golf course, which is actually designed by Greg Norman. I mean, slight segue, Greg Norman's trying to qualify for the Open Championship.
Saw that.
Get up the yard, mate.
Look. Not
you know what? For the sake of a story and talking points and the amount of awkward exchanges in press rooms, I really hope Greg Norman qualifies. It would actually be hilarious. It would be really funny. And all the questions that he'd get, nothing to do with his golf game, everything to do with you know what. It would be actually quite funny if Greg Norman qualified. So I'd be cheering.
Imagine all of the fucking interviews with him.
I know.
Yeah.
No one wants to see him play golf. I'd love him in a 20-minute interview slot.
Yeah.
Anyway, yeah. So this golf course is just under 7,500 yards, par 71. So it's long. The purse is 7.3 mil, which is pretty relatively low in PGA Tour standards, and the field kind of reflects that. So John Rahm's our best price 5-1 favorite. Why John Rahm's turning up here? I honestly don't really know.
Yeah, he's probably trying to find form, Donnie, because he's been useless the last
six, seven weeks.
Get the confidence back for major season, maybe. But, well, I suppose major season's already on the way, but still.
Curious. It's curious that John Rahm's showing up here. I mean, sometimes really good horses appear at fucking market raising the odd time and run around the place. So, you know.
Well, it's like the Gold Cup hero going down to Tremore for his open.
It really is. It really is.
That's true,
And going off at 20-1 on. I remember seeing, we went down to Leopardstown one day and there was a Death Duty. It was a Gordon Elliott horse went off at 14-1 on. And won by about 42 years.
Good man, 140 to win 10.
Fucking lay it on me.
Yeah,
that's our kind of betting here, isn't that right, bro?
Yeah,
that's it, lad.
So anyway, John Rahm's fives. Daniel Berger has just pulled out in the last couple of hours with a back injury. He was 14s. So then the market, we have Answer, best price 20s. Gary Woodland, best price 22s. Finau, 22s. Kevin Na, 25s. Chris Kirk, 33s. This is a piss take. Cameron Tringali, 33, has never won. Aaron Wise, Sebastian Munoz, Patrick Reed, all 33s. Brendan Todd, 40s. Yeah, like this is a bit shit.
Yeah.
To be honest, in the context of we're in the middle of major season, a lot of the big guys are taking a week off and chilling out. I don't really like the card. I've found, I think, a little bit of value. So, I mean, I can go and give you a couple of picks if you want. Let me carry on and just get this out of the fucking way.
on.
So, listen, we've no data for this golf course, none. But it looks like it's a bomber's paradise because there's two par fives over 600 yards. There's a bunch of par fours that are over 450. So it looks like guys who are going to send it a long way are going to do well. Added to the fact that the reports that I've read or the description of the golf course is you got really generous fairways, but then protecting the green, you have six lakes dotted around the course, and you've got a bunch of these massive cavernous bunkers, like these like 10, 12 foot deep bunkers that you got to avoid. So we need guys who are going to bomb it and then be able to control their second shots with short irons. I think they're going to do well. So that's kind of what I've based this off. So I've got 3.5 picks, right? So let's start with the shortest priced one. I'm taking Aaron Wise at 33-1. Reason for it is it's past blown grass. Like if Victor Hovland was playing this week, I'd just put a fucking win on Victor Hovland and leave it at that, but he's not. But in terms of past blown, Aaron Wise has got a good record. So he was tied 17th at Kiowa, which is past blown grass for the PGA. His last 3 years at Mayakoba, also in Mexico, also past blown. Tied 15th, second, tied 10th. Top 15 driving distance this season, 24 strokes gained off the tee. We like those optics. He was tied 21st last week at the RBC Heritage the week before. So he's got a little bit of form going on. And he posted back-to-back top 10s back in October, which I like as well. 33-1. It's a weak field. I think he's going to hit the ball a long way. I think he's going to do pretty well. So we like Aaron Wise. The other guys I've got... I've taken Carlos Ortiz, but the lad has missed four cuts in a row. Like he's hitting.
Oh, that Donny. This is his week, right?
I know. Like shocking form, but he's Mexican. So you've got a week here where there'll be guys at 100 and 200 to 1. For them, it's a big week because you've a weakened field. They don't have to beat all the best players in the world. They just have to beat John Rahm and a couple other top guys. Not even. So you will have some guys who really are focusing on this week, but I can't imagine guys who are focusing on this week more than Anser, who is only 14-1, and Carlos Ortiz, who's 50s. The reason he's 50s is, yeah, he's missed four cuts in a row. But his record in Mexico, when he has that added pressure, is really good. So he's been twice runner-up at Mayakoba. He was runner-up at Mayakoba earlier in the season. Well, I had him at, I think, 66-1, and he gave it a good run. And then he also was tied 8th in between his two runner-ups at Mayakoba. I know it's a different golf course, similar grass, similar setup, yada, yada. Also top 50 driving distance. His putting and his approach have been really bad, but if there's a week for him to turn it around, it's going to be this week. So 50-1, we'll give it a crack. Two more. So again, going with the Bombers Paradise narrative, Wyndham Clark is 66-1. Third biggest hitter on tour this year. His accuracy is shocking. I think he misses like half of the fairways, but hopefully the wide fairways means he's going to be able to snag some. And I don't expect there's going to be terribly penal rough around here, even if he misses it. So recent form isn't terrible either. He actually posted a top 10 with Cameron Tringali last week in Zurich, so he must have played at least some good golf. And I like 66-1, given the advantage he has off the tee. And then finally, and I'd say we're all doing this, if you didn't listen to the podcast last week, we had a great guest on, Ryan French, who's aka Monday Q Info. We asked Ryan straight out, of the guys who were showing up to Monday qualifiers, who looks like a don? Who looks like they're about to explode on the scene? And Ryan said this. A segment of the podcast is obviously where we are in the predictions game to a certain degree, and we try and find horses for courses and guys who are trending. And if I were to put you on the spot, and you can totally veto this, are there any guys at the minute who are really like turning heads that are, put it this way, they won't be doing Monday qualifiers for too much longer?
Mortgage the house, but yeah, Patrick Flavin, it's 100%. The kid is, and I saw a side of Patrick actually a couple of days ago at Monday that I hadn't seen. I mean, just it was most players coming off what had happened had like zero chance in the playoff, and he hit four perfect golf shots. It was ridiculous. So the long-winded answer is Patrick Flavin is going to be a menace once he gets his tour card.
So yeah, Patrick Flavin, Ryan thinks he's a stud, and he's after just getting a late invite to this. Maybe he got an invite because the PGA listened to the podcast and decided, oh, sure, we'll give the lads a run. So I think, Steve, you got him a bigger price than me, I think. I've got him at 150 to 1.
Yeah, 200 I got him. Eight places each way, so happy enough with that. He might have qualified, actually, Danny, I believe.
I thought I saw he got an invite, but if he qualified, then even better.
Yeah, I think he's snuck in.
He's also top 20 at the Bermuda or something, hasn't he? Anyway, reason for backing him, Ryan French told us to do it.
Yeah.
If Ryan French tells you to do something, he's a top guy. You should do it.
That's a primary source, they call that, Danny, you know what I mean?
Yes, it is. That is insider knowledge from a guy who is going all around the US looking at all these guys who are just below the elite, and he didn't even hesitate.
I like that confidence, and I'll just rattle through mine quickly, Donnie. So I've two picks. One of them is I'm gonna have to call him Patrick Flavin. I can't be having this Flavin pronunciation. Well, he's definitely Irish, half Irish.
I have cousins who are the Flavins. So
Flavins,
Paddy Flavin.
Paddy Flavin, 200 to 1.
I like it.
For no other reason, just recommendation from insider information. Pick number two, I'm going to take Abraham Answer. I got him at 22 to 1 this morning on William Hill. Nice. Eight places each way just before Berger pulled out. Look, Answer isn't in good form. He missed a cut at the Masters, where I think a lot of people would have fancied him to do well. He was coming off a fifth place finish at the match play the week before that as well. The one, like the course, he averages about 290 off the tee. So he's not one of the bigger hitters on tour. He's just massively accurate, massive green and regulation, strokes gained approach sort of player. The big point for me, or the big reason I'm getting behind him, is his best finish of the year, if you take the match play out of it, was back in November at Mayakoba Mexico, when he finished seventh. So I'm just going to take it back on home soil. He's a classy player. He's the winner of a WGC event. So he has a form in the book in terms of winning, where a lot of these players don't. And I just think he's going to be a popular pick. I think him and Woodland are going to be two of the most pick guys this week. But yeah, Abe Answer for me, 22.
It's not just last year or this year that he played well in Mayakoba. I think he's posted three.
Yeah, exactly. So his record in Mexico is obviously something he probably focuses a bit more, because he's the poster boy of Mexican golf. And I think it's just going to see him reignite in form. And I'll take, in this sort of a field, I think 22 to 1 about him is actually pretty good odds, even with his form not being the best. So Paddy Flavin, 200 to 1, and Abraham Answer, 22 to 1.
Nice.
Yeah, nice. I mean, straight off the back of that, off two of your picks, I'm also backing Abe Answer. I also, luckily enough, put all my bets this morning before Berger pulled out. And, you know, just for some of the listeners, sometimes when a golfer pulls out, it's a good thing in terms of your odds. Sometimes it's a bad thing. And this pretty much fucked most people's braces, it seems.
It really did. It fucked Answer,
yeah. It fucked a lot of people. So I managed to get Abe Answer at 22 to 1 as well. Nice. I managed to get Carlos Ortiz at 66 to 1. And I managed to get Paddy Flavin at 200 to 1. And I also added in one more. I added in Sebastian Munoz, the Colombian golfer. I think he's been playing okay this year. Looks like he's been kind of nearly there for the last few tournaments. He was third at the RSM Classic. He was tied fourth at the Zozo. Just hasn't really gotten it done, but I think this kind of golf course does suit him. He also went to school around South Texas and played in a lot of Mexican golf courses and stuff, he commented before. So I think this is a decent course for him. And I got him at, just trying to double check the pricing, I got him at 35 to 1 this morning. He's moved into, I think, 31 to 1 now, or 30 to 1 or something now. So, so those are my kind of 3.5 picks.
That's solid. I like Sebastian Munoz. I like him as a golfer. He's another guy who's capable of shooting the lights out.
Yeah.
First round leader, baby.
Yeah. Green is really impressive. He's got a really decent approach game. He's solid off the tee. He's not I wouldn't say he's a great putter, but he's certainly not a awful Luke List or someone. No offense, Luke List. You're a great golfer, man, but you know, the idea is getting the ball in the fucking hole, not to the green. no, good picks, lads. It'll be fun. So yeah, major thanks to Ryan French last week for giving us the 2022 Mexican Open winner, Paddy Flynn.
Oh yeah, right. At 200 to 1 as well, it'd be fucking...
Yeah. Oh, God, I only got 150. Buyer's remorse. Right, we'll carry on. So that's the Mexican Open. Like Steve said, if you are having a cheeky nibble at this one, make it small. Save yourself for bigger weeks ahead, starting next week, and obviously with the PGA around the corner. And then the DP World Tour, I think there's lots of value going on over here. I think the lads will probably agree. So... this is an interesting golf course. So it's hosted European Tour events in the past. It's also hosted qualifying school events, like the final round, like the Tour Championship of qualifying school. So Miguel Angel Jimenez won this in 2014, or same course, different tournaments.
The Catalan Open, it was called back then.
Yeah, there you go. So it's 7,333-yard par 72. What's interesting about this place is they actually modelled it on Augusta and Sawgrass. And I've looked at a couple of pictures. It's a very pretty-looking golf course. There's plenty of water knocking around. There's a lot of great contour and round greens. It looks like a beautiful place to spend 4 days. I actually think this, if you're going to watch one this week, I would be encouraging you to watch Catalonia more so than Mexico, to be honest. In terms of, let me just pull the market up here, but the market is, there's value everywhere you look in this market, because the favorite is a 20 to 1 favorite who is
Arrasabal
Pablo. Well, I mean, and he deserves it as well. He's been, five top threes in six events and two wins, which is just obscene. So I'm just looking here, an odds checker. He's best priced as 25 to 1. So he's got tied favoritism here with Rasmus Højgaard, with Bernd Wiesberger, and also with Jordan Smith. So as you can see, like, this field, there's just value everywhere. Like, the favorite... When have you seen a favorite at 25 to 1 before?
Yeah, that's obscene. It's
not in a long one. So there's a big log jam at the top of the market. So behind 25 to 1, you got Richard Bland at 28s. You've got Ategi at 28s. You got Adrian Maronk at 28s. You got Rasmus's brother Nikolai, 33s. Adrian Neus at 33s. Larry Cantor, 33s. Ryan Fox, 33s. Marcus Armitage. And then guys at 40s and 50s, Rosner Duplessis, who was very good last week, JB Hansen, 50 to 1. I really like that. He's not one of my picks, but I really like that price. John Catlin's playing, Matthew Pavon's playing, Scott Jemison, who went really well for a long time last week. You can get him on 365 at 66 to 1.
Yeah.
Even going further down, Haitong Lee, you can get at 55 to 1. Torbjörn Olesen, 66 to 1. I think this is going to be actually a fun tournament. This is, I'm much more sort of enthusiastic about this than I am at the PGA.
It looks like a tricky course as well, Danny. I think Jimenez won his event here at something like 5 under, 6 under. So it's not going to be a birdie fest unless they change it completely since then. But I think it's going to be weather dependent as well. Hopefully it'll be one of those, you know, 6-7 under winners as opposed to 25 under par.
That makes me love my first pick even more.
Oh.
So I'll give it to... Yeah, listen, he's getting ready to defend for the first time in his career. Richard Bland, 25 to 1. Give me that. I love watching the guy play golf. I love how he goes about his business. I love his story. Everything about him. He was on a... He's had surgery in the off-season, but he's fully recovered. Played quite well over at the Texas Valero on an invite. So 25 to 1 is obviously relatively short for a guy who's won once in like 500 odd starts. But one sort of indicator that I liked is he'll have good memories from here, because he finished third in the final round of Q School in 2011 to get his card back at this golf course. So that was a decade ago, when he was only 38. Isn't that crazy? Like, and here we are 10 years later, and the guy is like tied favorite. Just what a cool fucking story. Going back Richard Bland this week, actually. Just go and do it. I can't see a situation where he doesn't post a top 20. Like, yes, and it's, if it's a tough golf course, he'll plot his way around. I think that suits him. Yeah, go for it. Richard Bland, love it. 25-1. My two others, I am taking another guy, actually, who's in his 40s. So I'm taking, what is this? I'm taking Mikko Korhonen at 50-1, who is 41 years of age. So again, this like European Tour Q-School narrative, the year that Richard Bland came third, Korhonen actually won it. And then he also played here in 2014 when Miguel Angel Jimenez won and he finished tied 15th, which is nice. Add onto that, he's got two top 15s in his last three starts. And last week, he was tied 15th. It was a relatively easy golf course, but he shot all four rounds in the 60s. So 50-1, I like that. I don't know much about the guy, to be honest, but he has been sort of a bit of a journeyman European Tour player for a long time. But the Finns are cool. So we'll give it a crack at 50-1.
He's no Finnish.
Yeah. And then finally, I thought this price was way too big. I was really impressed with this guy last year. He played really well in Ireland. He won the Czech Masters. Johannes Veerman. So he's representing the States. Obviously, I'd imagine there's some Dutch lineage or heritage in there somewhere. But he's basing himself in the DP World Tour for the last couple of years and going really well. He struggled in South Africa during the South African swing. He missed a couple of cuts. He wasn't very good last year, but he posted four top 10s, and that didn't include the win in the Czech Masters. He's two top 12s a little bit earlier in the year. So 66-1 was quite a big price. He's a guy who impresses me. He's impressed me consistently that I've seen him, which admittedly is not as much as I've seen some of the guys in the PGA, but like the price. And I think there's an argument for probably 20 golfers in this, but they're my three. Richard Bland, 25s, Mikko Korhonen, 50s, and Johannes Veerman, 56.
Yeah, nice. Steve, do you mind if I just jump in really quickly? Because I didn't have picks for this, but in the last 5 minutes, I had a quick, very, very quick look. More of a, you know, throwing a dart against the fucking dartboard blindly. But
that's what we always do.
Go ahead.
I'll just go through mine really, really quickly. Donnie, you actually already mentioned one of them. I'll go with the shortest one first. So I'm going to go with Adrian Meronk, the extremely tall Pole. He's actually been playing quite well this year.
Did you mean that? That was excellent.
I did.
Very good.
He is 6'6", been playing quite well this year. I think I got him there at 25-1, which is the same price as, you know, Richard Bland, which I think is actually still pretty good value. And then the other person I'm going to bet on this week, Donnie mentioned him a few minutes ago, is Scott Jamieson, who finished T10 last week. He just didn't do it in the last round. He had a 11 par round on Sunday. Could have probably gotten a bit higher in the top 10, maybe top 6 if he had a better round. But you know, he's 50-1, and I think that's very good value considering how well he's been playing the last few weeks.
Yeah, hopefully there's some lessons learned for him from last Sunday that he can bring into this Sunday. Because I think he was first round leader. Was he not? Was he?
I think he ran away with it for a while and then he got,
yeah,
got
he, back. It was sort of a bit quite similar to Seamus Power at Pebble Beach earlier in the season. It's really tough for a guy who's not always in that position. It's really tough to lead out and then hold on to it for more than a day.
Tough to win, as they say, Donnie. Tough to win. Right, I have two picks I'll run through quickly. Pick number one at 50-1 is a Frenchman, Antoine Rosner. So if we wind the clock back to about a year or so ago, Antoine Rosner was regularly going off 18-20-1 favorite for a lot of these European Tour events around the continent, particularly that kind of Portugal Spain swing that we had, the island swing, going back last year. So Rosner has won twice in a DP World Tour. He's won once in 2020, once in 2021. And I'm thinking this sort of event, this sort of track is where he's going to get his win for 2022. So Rosner, he's made his last five cuts. He was fifth in Spain at the event last week, which was a nice return to form for him. His other cuts that he made, he didn't really contend, but I like the fact that he's playing 2 weeks in a row, fifth in in Spain last week. I think he can do better this week. So Rosner 50-1 got him on Bet365 with five places each way. And then pick number two is Torbjørn Olsen at 66-1. Couldn't resist the price. Olsen is he's probably one of the classier players in the field. He's a five-time winner on tour. Surprised actually that his most recent win was the 2018 Italian Open. Seems like a bit too long for a guy of his class not to be getting into the winner's enclosure before that.
The player as well.
Yeah, exactly. The reasons for backing Olsen. So he played in Qatar last month, finished 12th, and then he came back from about a month off last week in Spain to finish T25. So I like that little bit of form that he has the last two times he's gone out. He doesn't play very often, but when he does, he tends to do quite well. So yeah, Torbjørn Olsen, 66-1. I just think he's too classy to be going off at that price in this field. And pretty similar story with Rosner, 50-1. He's a guy that's starting to trend back into form. And I would not be surprised to see either or both of these boys up on the leaderboard come Sunday.
Yeah, it, you know what? It just feels like, definitely this week, but it feels like the DP World Tour is going to provide a shit ton of value for guys looking to have I think the DP World Tour, put it this way, the chances of getting a 50-1 winner on the DP World Tour this year are much higher than the PGA.
Oh, yeah.
I think that's going to be the case pretty much every week because, like, the PGA this week has got, probably the weakest field you're going to see. Apart from the tournaments that happen concurrently to the majors, mm-hmm. where everyone who's not qualified for the major plays, this field in Mexico is really weak. Whereas there's a lot of decent players in Europe. And you're guaranteed that whether it's the Hogards who expect it will be at some stage, or Adrian Maronk, or like there's going to be guys from this tour who by the end of the year will post the top 10 in a major and will now be on the radar, will break the top 50 in the world. There's always at least two or three of them.
Yeah.
And I think the Hogards are obvious candidates. Maronk's a candidate.
A few of the South African boys as well, probably. There's lots of them.
Yeah, lots of the South African boys as well. So yeah, it's going to be a good week. But they're decent picks. Let's hope we get a winner.
There you go. But keep the stakes small, save it for next week. Hopefully try and get a little winner. The major pots coming up, and any other business, boys? I think that's us.
We've got the PGA Championship coming up in I think 3 weeks, so we're going to be doing plenty of content for that. I already feel like I have my picks almost locked in for that, and Colin Morikawa is going to lead them. As always, guys, we really appreciate all the support that we get. In terms of your listenership, if we enjoy doing this, if you enjoy listening, that's amazing. If you'd like to give us a review, we would be massively appreciative. You can get us on Spotify, Apple, all that crack. And then on the socials, we're usually causing a ruckus over on Finders Fairway on Twitter. Maybe Twitter's going to be renamed as Elon next week. Who fucking knows?
I hope he goes after like the new Facebook or new Meta. I hope he calls it Beta or something. It'd be so funny.
Who knows?
Who knows on him as well? He nearly would, so.
And you know what? I have kind of idolized Elon Musk for years in terms of his vision and his genius and and now there's all this stuff in the press about him not treating workers very well and him being dangerous.
It's very negative, right?
You know what? I can't even form an opinion anymore because there's so much shite floating around. But anyway, that's not golf, so who cares? Have a great week. Thanks for listening, as always.
Yeah.
And thanks for your company, boys. As always.
Later, boys.
Of course. Go on, boys.
Just take a moment to admire the fact that I just hit a fairway.
There's only two things that can happen. You can hit a good shot or a bad shot, so why waste time doing it?
And wherever I set course records or whatever, I would be barefooted, drunk, playing golf, making every 20-footer I looked at.
Right at it! Home! He's done it again!
This is the dumbest hole I've ever played in my life.
Come on then, Shane. Knock it close. Shane Lowry is the Open champion.